Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Good morning. I'm Jane Marie Schaefer.
And good morning. I'm Kim Hitt.
And this is the Herzog Law Firm Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour, where we talk about estate planning, elder law, Medicaid, guardianship, all things related to long-term care. And we're here to answer your questions. It is a call-in show. We welcome your questions. And you can call in at 518-476-5900. So good morning, Kim. How are you?
I'm great. How are you this morning?
I am doing well. The great thing about radio is we can participate from anywhere. So Kim is calling long distance.
Yes. I probably shouldn't rub it in too much, but sitting enjoying a lovely view of the marshes of Folly Beach, South Carolina, just outside of Charleston.
That sounds lovely. Lovely.
And, so we're right, glad. And you're right. You shouldn't rub it in.
That's right.
I'm sorry. So I shouldn't talk about like going to take a nice long walk on the beach last night, yeah. And you know,
especially since it's raining here now,
and the fresh seafood that I had for dinner was incredible. Oh my gosh. Okay, and, I'm sorry.
That's all right. So
Jay Marie, we've been really busy doing a lot of interesting stuff as of late with clients.
Yes, we are. We continue to be busy. I mean, this is, I think, just a sign. Like, we always talk about the baby boomer population getting older, and, you know, I think we're getting busier and busier every year. More and more people need help. We've had a lot of people call in for advice lately. I've had a lot of people who don't have a power of attorney or a healthcare proxy, and then their loved one is either, you know, in the nursing home, or they've been diagnosed with, you know, dementia, and they can't sign any new papers. So that's a real problem. So. We always like to talk about how your power of attorney is probably one of your most important estate planning documents. Right, Kim?
Absolutely. You know, one of the things that I talk to about people, and for people who don't know, I'm a geriatric care manager. I'm actually not an attorney, so I'm a social worker that really focuses on, you know, aging issues and long-term care and, you know, sort of how to prepare to age, if you will. And, it's one of the first things that we talk about, how it's the most powerful planning tool you can have, because it allows you to, you know, put people in charge that you know will make the same decisions that you want, or will make decisions in your best interest in the event that you can't. And, you know, from my perspective as a social worker that helps people sort of age well and develop care plans to, you know, meet goals of aging, that's one of the first and foremost things that you can do in order to make sure that things go your way. And inevitably, there's a crisis. It's not really actually if it's going to happen. It's usually when, right? Because most folks, particularly now that we're aging older and longer, we're not necessarily aging more healthily, just because, you know, we've got folks that we're working with that are well into their hundreds now. That's not an uncommon occurrence. It used to be when I first started, you know, many decades ago, but not the case anymore.
That's right. I've read an article recently about this woman who was 100, had lived to 122 years old. Wow. And they were talking about this study that they had done to see what's the maximum age humans can live to. And they didn't come up with an exact figure, but they said between 120 and 150. I mean, that's really crazy to imagine. So
it is crazy. And I think I mean, I've said this before, but, you know, one of the AARP studies shows that 50% of the 10-year-olds that are alive today will age to be 100 or better.
That's crazy. So that, you know, that means we're really young then, right? If we're going to live to over 100.
Right. We're just barely halfway there.
That's right. And Ben's just a baby, Ben, you know? So.
That's right, just a baby.
Because you're going to live to 150 then, right?
Oh, gosh, I hope not.
But it even goes to show why it's even more, why it is so important to do your planning, because, you know, you really do want to make sure. I mean, one of the things that, you know, when we meet with people and talk to them, that the first thing is they like, I want to be at home. You know, I want to stay home. I want to be able to die in my home, or, and so often we unfortunately don't see that happen because of a lack of planning, really. Is what it boils down to at the end of the day.
That's right. And you can't do, you know, all the planning that we can do without someone in charge of that planning. That's why you really need a power of attorney, because if you haven't done the planning yourself and then you become incapacitated, well, at least if you have a power of attorney, they can work on some of the planning for you. You know, planning in terms of getting you care in the house, you know, Kim talks about this in a lot of all the different community programs that are out there to help you age at home. You know, in addition to Medicaid, or before we even talk about Medicaid, there's a lot of programs that can help you before that.
Right. There's so many services out there, and really it's just a matter of educating and really putting things in place. And you know, again, too, even once you put things in place, we often tell people that they need to really review their plans as well, because, and, you know, in a lot of cases, we work a lot with the Alzheimer's Association, and so many of our clients have Alzheimer's and dementia, and a lot of times we'll see, you know, the primary caregiver come in and struggling with some issues with their loved one, and one of the questions we ask them when reviewing their documents is not only for the individual that has the disease, but we're also wanting to do planning for the well spouse. And quite often the well spouse still has, you know, their partner or significant other named as their power of attorney. And we have to change that as well, because, you know, somebody with a cognitive issue can no longer make decisions for you. So, so important to kind of pull those documents out and dust them off every few years to make sure that they still align with your plans.
Yeah, that's right. I met with a family this week, you know, the parents, and they only had one daughter. And it was similar to what you said. They had appointed each other first, but the dad was diagnosed with dementia, and the mom had never handled the financial stuff. The dad always had. And she didn't feel capable of handling it or didn't want to. So we did their documents and we put the daughter in charge. You know, she was fine with that. She was helping out already. So, you know, we updated everything, and it's going to make it easier for them. You know, had a document that had, you know, the father first and then the daughter. But the problem with that is if you go around to use that, you need some kind of letter or proof as to why the first person named can't act. So first of all, to get a bank to accept your power of attorney, let alone when you're trying to prove that the first person can't act and the second person is. So that's why we suggest you just do a brand new power of attorney and appoint your children directly.
Right, right. And the power of attorney is getting ready to change. Is that what I understand?
It is. It is. And this is strange. This is one time where New York was really last minute. So the power of attorney, they passed a law last year that the power of attorney form was going to change on June 13th. And they had the law, the statute, you know, all set. But in New York, the way it works, then New York State then puts out an official form for the power of attorney. Well, they didn't do that. And they only released that form just this past week. So
oh, wow.
There's been a lot of scrambling around. So for people to get the form and figure it out and see what's going on. So we'll be incorporating it, you know, into our daily documents, but probably not for another week or so because of the late release of it. But the one thing that's good about the new power of attorney form is that it does not have a separate statutory gifts rider. It has provisions right in the main form about gifting. And the reason for that is the form was just very confusing to many people. The old form, I should say. It was 14 pages long, and most people didn't read it all or understand it all. So if you don't really know what you're signing, that's leading up to a possibility for abuse of the power of attorney. You know, not in the majority of... Yep. Not in the majority of cases, you know, where it's your family members, although family members can abuse the power of attorney. But lots of times where elderly people are alone and someone offers to help them and they do sign papers giving that person power, they can lose money that way.
Right. We've actually seen, you know, I would say a little more than usual cases of financial abuse as of late. It's been a little interesting. I'm not sure if it's because of the pandemic and people have been more isolated and have become more prone to having things happen. I also think scammers are becoming a little more savvy, unfortunately, as far as you know, how they're getting around the system of things. And, you know, the pandemic allowed for a lot of ease of things, right, to be able to bank and things like through telehealth and, or, you know, teleconferencing and things like that. But I also think it's sort of opened the door for people to become a little, you know, more easily targeted for financial abuse. And so that's something we really stress, that it's important you kind of keep track of things because of that.
Right. Yeah, that's right. So I'll often get a call from a child or someone saying, how can I make sure that, you know, my parents don't get in trouble, that they don't get scammed, right? So, you know, if you're on the power of attorney, then I say then you can check their bank accounts, right? And this is for, you know, parents where you don't want to take away their control. You want them to have some control, but you just want to make sure they don't get scammed. So there's lots of things you can do where you can put alerts on the bank account if it's over a certain dollar amount. You can put, you know, the fraud protection on there. You can just go in and check online and see if something looks like an unusual purchase that your parent wouldn't make. And then you could follow up and check that out. Same thing for their credit cards. But you have to be a power of attorney, you know, to be able to do that. So that's why it's important to have the power of attorney.
Right. And, you know, there are circumstances, too, where, you know, we advise kids to be on the bank account with their parents as well, and that just adds an extra layer of protection. And there are different, you know, services that you can sign up for, too. A lot of banks have their own alert systems, but then there are other, you know, services like LifeLock and things like that really do take that security to an extra level, which is always nice for people.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's right. So you're not worried so much about monitoring it constantly. You know, someone else can alert you for that.
Right. And I know that there's a lot of confusion about powers of attorney and from the perspective of professionals and, you know, even lay people. You know, a lot of times kids will go to the bank with the power of attorney and the bank will say, nope, this is no good, or... You know, when we're doing a Medicaid application for a family member and they send their power of attorney to the insurance company so that they can either, you know, get a, you know, the value of whatever the life insurance is, or, you know, needing to change ownership for different kinds of things. Is there a way or how we advise people that to handle those certain circumstances when a bank says, oh, no, sorry, it's, you know, the power of attorney is not good enough to do this?
That happens quite frequently. And a lot of times what the bank is trying to find out is if it's an older power of attorney, They want to make sure that it's still valid. So there's sometimes, well, there's two ways you can address that. Sometimes the bank will let the person who's appointed the power of attorney sign an affidavit saying that the power of attorney is still in effect and that they're still the person, the agent. Or sometimes it's just a letter from us as the attorney, and we would say that, you know, this power of attorney is still valid. And then those usually help the bank, you know, accept the power of attorney. It's not required, you know, for us to do that. But sometimes it's easier just to do that with the bank to get it done rather than, you know, fight with the legal department at the bank to get the power of attorney accepted.
Right, right. And I know that it's frustrating, but the banks are just trying to protect their customers ultimately at the end of the day, right? Because like you just said, sometimes the scam and fraud is just so easy that they want to make sure that everything's on the up and up.
Well, sometimes the banks go overboard. So I had a client this week who, you know, I won't say the name, but like I had used her full name in most of the documents, but then in one place I used, you know, the shortened version of her name. You know, like if I, like, let's say it was Elizabeth and then I wrote Beth. And then the bank wouldn't accept it without a letter from me saying that that was the same person.
Oh, wow.
So that's like really nitpicky in my opinion, but it was kind of an unusual name. It wasn't like Mary Smith, you know, so it was unlikely there was a duplicate out there.
Right, right. It is, you know, in these times, you can never be too safe, right?
That's right. And sometimes in the interest of time, we'll just, you know, quickly do a letter for the bank and hopefully that gets it pushed through.
Right. Well, if anybody has any questions, please call in. The number's 518-576-5900. It's an opportunity to get all of your questions answered. I'm sure there's somebody sitting out there thinking of something.
That's right. And if you don't want to call in, but you want to find out more about what we talk about, we have webinars coming up this week. On Wednesday, we have two webinars at 10 o'clock. This is Kim's webinar, How Not to Pay for Services, Long-Term Care Solutions. And that's where she does talk about all those great community programs and what you can do to help your loved ones. And then at 2 o'clock, it's estate planning and prime time. And that's a really great one. That's where David uses some famous TV shows to kind of to make the estate planning concepts easier, right? If you're relating it to a story like that, you can understand it much easier. So that's at 2 o'clock. And then the following week is webinar week. So we have webinars every day at 2 o'clock. On Monday, we have the legal and financial planning for Alzheimer's disease, and that's the one we present in partnership with the Alzheimer's Association. And we'll talk about that in a minute because that is the longest day.
It is.
On Tuesday, we have top 10 reasons to plan your estate. On Wednesday, we have wills versus trust. On Thursday, we have aging in place. And on Friday, we have Medicaid and estate planning myths. And you can sign up for any of these webinars on our website at www.herzoglaw.com, or you can call us at 518-465-7581, and we will send you the Zoom link. So, Kim, the one that we're doing on Monday, that day is called the longest day. Can you explain what that is?
Right. So in addition to actually being the longest day, because it is the first day of summer, so it's the longest day of the year, we actually, the Alzheimer's Association, which we are partners with the association, they recognize it. It's one of their signature fundraising days because they are recognizing the longest day for caregivers and taking care of somebody that has Alzheimer's dementia. Because every day is the longest day for caregivers in a lot of these circumstances when you're caring for someone that has a cognitive issue. So the longest day is really a day where we get out and do something in honor of the folks that we take care of. It can be, we have a group actually in the Northeast that are painting the peaks purple. So we've got so far, I think, about 17 teams or groups that are going to be hiking 29 different high peak hikes through the Adirondacks. In an effort to paint the pinks, peaks purple. There are different groups that will be doing, you know, an all-day stand-up paddle boarding. There's a bowling tournament going on. There's just lots of ways to honor folks that are dealing with this disease. So we decided that we wanted to host the legal and financial planning on the longest day, just sort of as a kickoff to our summer of 75, right?
Yes, that's right. So this is the 75th year that the Herzog Law Firm has been in existence. And one of the things that we're doing this year to celebrate is we are sponsoring the Alzheimer's Walks in the fall. We're doing a lot of fundraising for Alzheimer's because it's really something that touches, you know, a lot of our clients, and we really want to bring awareness and raise money for that. So that's something that we're doing. And then we also do these presentations with the Alzheimer's Association, where we're getting out information to caregivers on how what they need to do legally to help take care of their loved ones. So that's just some of the things that we're doing with the Alzheimer's Association this summer.
Jaymarie, Kim,
right.
We do have a caller.
Yes.
We have Beth from Albany.
Hi, good morning, Beth.
Good morning, ladies. I have a question. When I'm in my mid-70s and very good health and active, but when does one transition from Medicare into Medicaid? Does there have to be the event happen? And I think you need to apply first. So do you apply and have it ready in the backstage for when you might need to use Medicaid services, transition from Medicare to Medicaid?
So that's a great question. And so Medicaid is the type of Medicaid you're talking about is Medicaid that's going to give you help at home. It's called community Medicaid. And so to apply for that, besides being financially eligible, you do have to be medically eligible. So you do have to wait until, you know, you need some help. It sounds like you're still doing pretty well, right, and getting around okay?
Oh, yes, yes. And then you hear, you tell your stories about when the event happens, people are scrambling around like crazy to get the help. So it would be nice to know that something is there. The papers are signed and you just trade one folder for another and then things can go relatively smoothly.
Well, the one thing you can do in advance is to prepare financially to make sure you're financially eligible for Medicaid. And that's kind of, it would be looking at your assets, seeing if you need to transfer any assets out of your name, seeing if you need to do a trust. And that is something that you can do in advance so you're ready. Okay.
Yeah.
And then the second part, you do have to, you know, wait. But if you have the financial part ready, then it's easier to do the second part.
Okay. That makes sense. Right. Have cash stashed away or ready to use in the event. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right.
And now it's sort of more important than ever to do planning because during legislation last year, New York State passed a new look-back rule for community Medicaid where one didn't exist before. So, you know, because of the pandemic, the date has been pushed back to January of this year, but starting in January, there will be a new 30-month look-back for Medicaid, and it will start effective October of last year. So right now is the time to do some planning without worry of penalty or look-back or, you know, that sort of thing.
Okay.
So we're encouraging people to take a look at things right now so that they understand really what their options are going to be in the future.
All right. And if there should happen to be a catastrophic event, that car accident or something, God forbid, but at the moment I'm not able to sign any papers or transition from Medicare to Medicaid, if indeed it looks like I have to have that for recuperation or for the rest of your life. Then can the my power of attorney person do the Medicaid application in my stead?
Yes, that's what I was going to ask you, if you have a power of attorney. So if you do, and then your power of attorney could apply for Medicaid, transfer assets, do anything that they need to do. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Those are my questions. Thank you very much.
Well, you're welcome. Thank you, Beth. Thanks for calling. Right. So those are some good questions, because people do want to try and plan ahead and for when something happens. And, you know, by a combination of having a power of attorney and looking at your finances, you can start to get prepared for the time in the future where you may need help. So it's all about kind of planning in advance and thinking ahead.
Right. And I mean, that's usually, you know, the way we encourage people to stay in control the longest. I know a lot of times it's a really hard, it's hard to sit down and kind of talk about what your wishes are and what your plans are. And you think, oh, I can do that tomorrow. And it's the best way to stay in control. And that is one of the things that we talk about in the legal and financial planning that we do specifically for Alzheimer's disease, because you know, with all the advancements that are being made currently, we're able to diagnose people earlier and earlier. So we're getting a lot of folks that have, you know, early onset, early, you know, diagnosis. And just because you have a diagnosis of Alzheimer's doesn't mean that you can't make decisions for yourself, right? Like, you can be completely aware of what's going on. You can make those choices and decisions for yourself. Why it's so important to start early. And then those decisions can just carry through as the disease progresses, because, of course, we know that inevitably that is something that's going to happen. It's not a disease that has a cure, although last week we did announce that there is a new drug that really does help extend and clinically treats Alzheimer's. So it's very exciting, and that's really one of the reasons why we're such big supporters of the association, because we see that promise. And the Alzheimer's Association is one of the leading funders of research. And research is so important in combating this disease, because currently Alzheimer's is the sixth leading cause of death in the U.S., and there are currently more than 6 million people living with the disease. And with our baby boomers coming in, it's certainly those numbers are not going to be going down. So that's why
that's
we have
right.
such a strong commitment. We see it multiple times a day in our office. It's one of the reasons people present to us because of this disease. So that's why it's so important for us to work to gather. Some of the other things, though, that we're doing during our summer of 75 is we're going to be hosting a blood drive with the Red Cross. We're going to be doing that in August. We're going to be doing one in Albany at our Corporate Woods, not at our location, but Corporate Woods, and then we'll be doing one also in Kingston, which will be exciting. And then we're also going to be participating in the Queensberry Golf Tournament, and that's this Monday, actually. So a couple days. Dave has got a team that's going to be golfing up there. And then we're also supporting the Colony Senior Center at their golf tournament, which will be at Schuyler Meadows in September, I believe, on the 27th. So we've got a lot going on this summer that is going to be keeping us busy.
And ladies, we are at the bottom of the hour, so we're going to take our break right here. We'll be right back with the second half of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate Medicaid Planning Hour coming up right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for,
options available for Medicaid planning, and more.
With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany,
West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs,
Executive Woods in Clifton Park,
and Flatbush Road in Kingston,
our attorneys are here to help you.
If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David,
Jane Marie Harry, or Debbie,
please call us during normal normal business hours, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m.
To contact us at our Albany office, call 518-465-7581.
Our Saratoga Springs office at 518-581-8131.
Our Clifton Park office at 518-952-4010.
And our Kingston office at 845-338-6405.
Let the Herzog Law Firm help you navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
And welcome back. I'm Jane Marie Schaefer.
And I'm Kim Hance.
And this is the Herzog Law Firm, Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour, where we talk about all things long-term care, Medicaid, estate planning, wills, trusts, powers of attorney, etc. And we're happy to answer any questions that you may have. You can call in. It's 518-476-5900. And we'll be happy to answer any questions that you have. We've been talking a bit about powers of attorney and how important they are in planning ahead for incapacity. And I want to kind of turn this to a different type of question that we get. And this happened to me this week. It's a common situation, Kim, where a client called for their father who is went into the hospital, went into rehab. Now they're in the rehab facility. And the son and the mom want to take the father home. But the rehab facility is saying they don't think he's, you know, able to go home and they want to keep him there. And they're doing all kinds of things to, you know, switch him to nursing home Medicaid, kind of against the family's wishes. I mean, it's not always, I mean, that happens a bunch of times where you do have to fight for the right to bring someone home, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I so often say to people, I mean, you know, you really do want to evaluate it from all angles and all perspectives. you know, one of the things that we talk a lot about to folks, particularly now, home care is really hard to obtain. So we just want to make sure that the home is set up, that it can be safe for, you know, not just the individual that's getting the care, but for the family members as well. And there are lots of things that we can do. A lot of times the facility will say that somebody needs 24-hour care. Well, there's lots of ways that we can provide 24-hour care. It's not just a caregiver. So we're going to want to, you know, evaluate and look at all of the different resources that are available to be able to do that. And that's a lot of what I do, you know, is help families really understand and coordinate and look at the different options that are available and out there to help make sure that it's a safe environment.
Right, and in this case, and you can tell me if this is helpful, but it's a two-family house where the mom and dad live downstairs and the son lives upstairs. So I would think that would be pretty helpful in terms of a home care situation.
Absolutely, because you've got your built-in backups in the event that you hire staff and staff isn't there, or, you know, always having a family member next door or right attached to the same property is obviously always very helpful. You know, a lot of what I do too is advocate with families. You know, it is sitting down and attending those care planning meetings with rehabs and facilities to say this is the plan we have laid out. Because a lot of times families can't articulate that, and they don't, you know, really understand what their rights are, number one, what the options are for care and assistance. And that's really one of the things that I work with. And when a facility says, well, no, they need 24-hour care, well, okay, well, you know, this is how we're presenting that they're going to get their 24-hour care. And I'm not saying nursing homes are bad, but, you know, nursing homes don't have one-on-one 24-hour care. You know, sometimes they have one aide to 15, 20 people, and you can't tell me that aide is always available to every individual in that facility. So there are lots of ways that we can coordinate a plan for folks.
Yeah, and especially when you have family living right nearby, that's seems to me that it's much easier to get a home care plan in place, assuming you can help, you know, find the right aides. But these people live an area where A's can get there easily, right? Some of the problems we encounter are with people more out in rural areas, and they can't get people to come there as easily.
That, and, you know, if a family member who's going to be the primary caregiver is not well themselves, obviously when you've got two aging people, you want to make sure that you do keep that caregiver well. So sometimes, I mean, Jane Marie, you and I just had a home visit with a client that lives independently by himself. He's primarily bedbound, right? Mm-hmm. He has a very debilitating case of MS, and I'm a candidate of, if he were to end up in a nursing home, they would say to him he could not go home without 24-hour care. But he is thriving, I would say. You know, like, he is in control of everything. You know, his home is set up wonderfully for him. You know, as you and I noted, he's got an overhead track that helps transfer him in and out of bed. He's got aides that come in a few hours in the morning, a few hours in the evening. And the rest of the day, he's really set up to, you know, succeed for himself. And you know, a lot of times folks feel it's intrusive to have somebody there 24 hours a day. So there are lots of different types of technology that we can put in place that can assist with different issues and different concerns for folks. So it really is individualized, and it really is, you know, I say to folks all the time, it's not necessarily a caregiver that's providing the 24-hour care.
That's right. Yeah, I was impressed with this client, because it's not the norm where someone in his condition wouldn't have around-the-clock care, but he is mentally competent. He's fine on his own for several hours a day. And what stuck in my mind was, he said, well, why would I want someone here 24 hours? They're just going to sit here staring at me, and I'll stare at them. You know, because there's something for them to do all day long, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So
and it's not like the case, but in this case, he is competent. You know, it's not like someone with dementia where you may need someone to kind of look out for them all day long. But if you're competent and, you know, you just have more physical disabilities, you can have someone help you at different times a day, but you don't need someone there all day long. And as you said, he's been doing this for quite a while and plans to keep doing it for quite a while. So,
right. You know, and that's really what we're here to help do, is to promote that independence, you know. And again, that's why it's so important to have the conversations early, so that people really know what you want and can help implement that plan. I mean, you're meeting with a family that I've been working with on Monday, and the two nieces are powers of attorney, and one of the things that their aunt has stressed more than anything is that she wants to be at home as long as her dog is alive. And so they're, you know, one of the questions that they had as far as being power of attorney was, well, we know what our aunt's wishes are. And so, you know, no matter, and it became a discussion of what the wishes were versus what's in the best interest of the aunt, right? Because sometimes that varies. And, you know, a lot of times folks who do have power of attorney are questioning, what are my actual powers? I was like, yes, she has voice that she wants to be home, but we have to decide whether or not that's in her best interest or not, because there are so many factors that play into that. So.
Right, absolutely. So you're going to try and honor that person's wishes for as long as you can, until it's a situation where it may not be safe for that person anymore. At all possible, you want to try and keep them where they want to be. And there's probably no reason why that person can't stay at home if we can get enough help in there, you know.
Correct.
That is one. People are very attached to their pets, and unfortunately you can't take your pets to assisted living or nursing homes. So maybe sometimes that's a motivating factor to stay at home, right?
Right. And there are some, and this is what I was explaining to her, there are some facilities that if you can care for the pet yourself, you can bring it with you. So we just have to figure out how that might happen. You know, so there are different avenues that we can take and look at. But that's sort of an important part of planning too, is what do happen with pets and things like that. So there's lots that go into to what we do with folks when we sit down and we talk to them about these issues.
That's right. We cover a wide range of topics. You never know what we're going to be helping someone out with, because it's all part of your big plan to kind of age in place and stay at home. We would welcome more questions if you want to call in. It's 518-476-5900. We'd be happy to hear from you with your questions. If you want to attend one of our webinars, we have two webinars coming up this week on Wednesday. At 10 o'clock, How Not to Pay for Services, Long-Term Care Solutions. And at 2 o'clock, Estate Planning in Prime Time. And then the following week is Webinar Week, where we have a webinar every day at 2 o'clock. At Monday, it's Legal and Financial Planning for Alzheimer's Disease in partnership with the Alzheimer's Association. On Tuesday, it's the Top 10 Reasons to Plan Your Estate. On Wednesday, it's Wills versus Trusts. On Thursday, it's Aging in Place. And on Friday, it's Medicaid and Estate Planning Myths. And you can register for any one of those webinars by going to our website at www.herzoglaw.com or calling our office at 518-465-7581.
Jay Marie, Kim, we have another caller. We have Rose from Cambridge.
Hi, good morning, Rose.
Hi, good morning. I'm wondering, I remember hearing you talk about home care and the law that's being passed, and it sounds like we're coming down to the wire. Do you think I can remember that date? It escapes
me. That's okay.
Do you know what I'm talking
about?
We'll remind
you of that date. Yes. So with Community Medicaid, they are switching to a look back where they're going to look back and see if you made any transfers. It's a 2.5-year look back. That's not going into effect until January 1st of this year. You know, if you were listening earlier to our shows in the year, it was going to be July 1st, but now it got pushed back 6 more months, so it's January 1st.
Of 22.
Of 22, that's correct.
Oh.
But they're going to, starting in January, they will look back to October of last year. So that's where it gets a little confusing, is that right now you sort of, between now and January, you have a free pass. But starting in January, anything that was done, you know, after October 1st of 2020, it will be under the microscope.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So to speak.
Very good. Thanks for that. Okay.
You're welcome.
Have a good weekend. Thanks.
Thanks, Rose.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
And we have another caller. We have Lorraine in Athens.
Hi, good morning, Lorraine.
Good morning. I have a question regarding gifting my children with some money, if I could. My husband and I sold our home around 2 years ago he passed. And I have the house money sitting, and my son is going to be making me an apartment in his home, so I'm financing that. I hope that's all right.
That is.
Oh, thank you. My question, obviously, is can I gift the children? I would love to give them. I have 6 children, and I'd like to give them. I know you're allowed to do a certain amount each year, but do they look back on it, or how does that work?
They do. So there's kind of two parts of your question I want to address. So the first one is where your son's building the apartment and you're giving him money for that, that's fine to do. But you would want to put some kind of agreement in place that the money you're giving him is in exchange for living there. Because if you don't have like that, Medicaid may look at that as a large gift to him. Having an agreement in place would be good to have, so they wouldn't count that transfer as a gift. Okay.
Now, may I ask, for the apartment end of it, am I permitted to give him rent money? Because obviously it's in his home. It's a beautiful basement apartment he's making me. And I want to help the finance, obviously, the electric's on him and the taxes and what have you. So what I'd like to do is give him a monthly rent as well. Is that something I can do?
Again, it has to be documented, and an agreement has to be put in writing, right? So anytime you're paying him monthly, you know, again, you need to have, like you would just have if you were renting somewhere, a rent agreement, sure. Now for the gift to your other children, the problem or the issue with that is if you make gifts to them now, there's a, you know, 5-year look-back period. So for nursing home or you know, in January, there'll be that 2.5-year look-back for community Medicaid.
Oh.
So if you are going to gift, you have to be aware of that look-back period. I wouldn't say not to make the gifts, but if you are going to make the gifts, I would have the kids not spend the money until the look back period is gone.
The look back period would the look back period actually start the date you give the children the money, not the date you got the money? I'm so confused.
No, it starts the day that you get the money. Right.
Okay. So the better thing, you're saying this is going to change in January?
Well, right. But even if you gift now, right, and then in next year you need to apply for CARE, next year there's a 2.5-year look-back period for community Medicaid. I guess I should ask the question, are you doing well now?
Well, I have certain issues, but I'm 78 going on 79, and I'm pretty spry.
That's pretty good, you know? So it's kind of
thank God.
Of gifting money versus the risk of you might needing care, you know? That's kind of the two things you have to balance. You could gift money, but you know you have a risk there, you know? But if you think, because you're living with your son, you probably have you're able to live at home a lot longer than you would be if you were living on your own, right?
Well, even if it comes down to that, they'll take care of me as long as they can. They're great kids, so I have no problem there. As long as they can, they will.
So that's good to know, and sometimes that helps in this situation when we're trying to into the future with crystal ball and see where you'll be in, you know, 2 years.
Right. You don't know, right? Now, the thing is, with the gifting, if I were to do it now, it would they'd look back 5 years from this date. But is there a future date that this will change? I didn't hear the beginning of the other question about a 2.5. Is that going to change in January?
So, all right, so there's two types of Medicaid you can get. So one is for nursing homes. That's the one that has the 5-year look-back period. The second type of Medicaid is called community Medicaid care in your home, and that's a 2.5.
Oh, okay. I get you. So it's two different things, but it's not changing the nursing home one. Okay, gotcha. So the best thing I could do is give the children money now and then hope for 5 years I'm doing well.
I think so. I think this is start the look back period, but I would say, you know, give us a call during, there's probably more to discuss here, but in general, I think you start the gift now, it's always better to start the look back period earlier.
Okay. Is there an amount that there's a limit to per year? Does that have any, or is it something I could just...
We get that all the time. There's a $15,000 limit for gift taxes, but Medicaid...
For child?
Yeah, but that doesn't apply for Medicaid. Medicaid, they're looking at any gifts over $2,000. So that's the dollar amount for Medicaid.
Oh.
Yeah, so if you make a few $100s, $2,000 per transaction.
Per year, but is that per year though, or can you give 20,000?
No.
2,000.
The 2,000 is not per year. No, it's each time you write out a check. If it's under $2,000, Medicaid isn't questioning it. Right.
Okay. Well, that's something to know. All right. So I have the office number. So if I have further questions, I could give the office a call and even make an appointment. Right.
Absolutely. You can do that and set up an appointment for a free consult. Okay.
Terrific. Oh, you've been so helpful. Thank you very much, and you have a good day.
Thanks, you too.
And we have another caller. We have Bonnie in Niskayuna.
Hey, good morning, Bonnie.
Hello. Hi, good morning. My mom is in a nursing home, and dad is almost 87. He's starting to decline cognitively, and we're trying to get everything in place, so to say. We know there's a will, but dad does not know if there's a copy of it. I attempted to reach out to the attorney's office, which they had done this many, 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 many years ago, and it appears that he has since retired to the point where I called the phone number and it's no longer in service. So I'm wondering, how would we locate this will?
So that's a good question. So you, one place you can check to see is on the, there's a list of attorneys on the New York State Office of Court Administration, and you can see if that attorney is still active or not, and if he is, then there would be contact information for him on there. You know, when other than that, you know, if he retired and sold his practice to someone else, he could have transferred the files there, but you should have been informed of that, right?
So they would have been informed, and that doesn't mean we're going to know.
I know, that doesn't mean you're going to know. But I do want to say, so looking for the will is important, but more importantly is making sure your dad has a power of attorney in the healthcare proxy.
He does, yes, both, yep.
Okay, all right, that's good. Yeah, because if he's starting to decline, you're going to have to help, you know, take care of things for him, right?
Yeah, we're in the midst of that, and it's a busy time.
You know, so unfortunately with the will, if you can't find that attorney or look through your parents' documents, if you can't find a letter, you know, from when that attorney retired, you could be wasting a lot of time trying to find that lawyer. It's probably simpler just to have your dad sign a new will, you know, while he's, you know, before he gets any worse.
Okay.
That's one thing to do.
Okay, very good. Thank you so much, Liz. I appreciate it.
Okay, you're welcome.
That was a good question because we often talk, Jane Marie, about, you know, even somebody with Alzheimer's, they can still make decisions and they can still do that planning even with a diagnosis, you know.
Right.
Even though somebody does have a diagnosis, it is worth having a consultation to see what the options are.
That's right. It's worth it to see if they still, like you said, early on, they can still have enough understanding to sign a will. So that would be a good way to get that done. The situation she explained, unfortunately, you know, some attorneys do retire, but don't do anything. I mean, you're supposed to either notify your clients that they can have the wills back or transfer them to a new attorney because, you know, you're entitled to have that original will back. But sometimes that doesn't happen, you know. So that will may be basically lost somewhere without attorney's files.
Wow, that's really would be really frustrating. I would imagine.
It would be if that's it is. So that's why if he can sign a new will, that's the best thing. And then I didn't mention this, but also the family should be looking at the accounts to see if they are the types of accounts that you could put beneficiaries on, or if they're joint accounts. You know, not everything has to go through the will. Some things can pass just by naming a beneficiary or having a joint owner on it. So that's another avenue to look at. If everything has beneficiaries, you wouldn't need a will.
Right. Right. And then obviously, you know, with mom still being in a nursing home and dad now obviously having a diagnosis that we know is going to require some type of intervention or care in the future, planning is more important now than ever.
Yes, that's a common situation we see where one parent is, you know, physically unable, you know, to care for themselves and the other parent has a cognitive decline. So it's kind of balancing those two and getting care for both of them. We had a client recently where it was a similar thing. The dad had dementia. The mother has some heart issues. And so they're trying to get full-time care in the house. In a situation like that where they both need care, probably someone who could live in would be a good solution.
Yeah, it can, those are things, the avenues that we're looking more and more at, particularly with the caregiver shortage that we're currently dealing with. Lots of, we're starting to make it work through some of our Medicaid programs, which is really nice. We have the opportunity to be creative and think outside of the box with some of the options that we can provide folks.
Mm-hmm. Right, because you can have Medicaid approve so many hours for you, but it still may be a question of finding the people to fill those hours, which is a problem.
That's usually what I say to people. It's not so much now about getting the hours approved. It's more about finding the person who's going to provide the hours, which is a little frustrating, you know. It's a little frustrating, for sure.
Right, it can be frustrating because of the pay to try and find someone. During COVID, a lot of people didn't want to have someone strange working in their house, they want an outsider coming in. So now that that's easing up and people are vaccinated, I think it's going to open up and there'll be more people who are willing to work in someone else's home. So we are coming up to the end of the show. So if you had any questions that you didn't get to put in today, you can call our office, 518-465-7581, and we set up a free consultation. So thanks for listening. Have a great weekend.
Have a wonderful weekend.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you'd like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581, the Saratoga office at 518-581-8131, or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.